Before we begin this episode, I would like to give a shout out to all of our patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. Your support really makes it possible for us to continue. As some of y'all know, all of our live performances were canceled due to COVID, and that put a major dent on our income. So if you would like to support us and keep us going, feel free to go to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. You can follow the link in the description of this episode. I would like to give a particular shout out to all of our I Know Her level patrons, including Karina, Itzel, Yulisa, Chrissy, Jacqueline, Clara, Janelle, Rolando, Gianna, Laura, Kendall, Marisol, Monica, Vincent, Miguel, Vanessa, Mac, Sandy, Nancy, Guadalupe, Valentina, Yasmin, Amanda, Jocelyn, Jason, Vanessa, Alana, Joel, Evelyn, Magdalena, Ronnie, Linda, Blanca, Bianca, Daniel, Kimberly, Jen, Cassandra, Abigail, and Aranya. All right, y'all, thank you so much for your support, and hope to see more of y'all, you know, join us on Patreon. You get some dope things like early episodes and like live streams and even some horoscope readings, so check it out. All right, let's start this episode.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Right. Fucking thing sucks!
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. I am your host, Ruben.
And this is your other host, Cassandra.
Now known as Anne Femme Waves on Instagram, but still Chicanisma on Twitter. Still Chicanisma on Facebook, and Gringa Tears on Twitter, because she has no brand.
Why are you always dragging me, like, seconds into our intro all the time?
Because I wanted to, like, get to the point. This episode is about Clown Week. We're celebrating clowns. But we're also...
You're, you know, like, implying that I'm a clown. Did you know you just did that? That's exactly what you just did.
No, it's Clown Week and Cassandra, which is a different topic altogether.
Okay. Okay.
You changed your name on Instagram.
Yeah, so let's get to it. Damn, we're jumping right in.
Okay, how are you? How have you been?
No, why change your name on Instagram? Me and Ruben literally just talked for like an hour and a half before this recording. So we already got that out of our system. We don't have to do it right now.
Yeah, y'all are not going to... This episode, you're not going to find out how we've been.
But if you want a hint, it's not good. as always, if you've listened to all our prior episodes, you'll know how we're doing. I don't think once we've ever said, I actually think only one time I have said that I am doing well on this podcast.
I feel like we've said we have done well. What do people want? Like, we are working class people, like brown people, like what?
Yeah. We're bitter. Like, that's it. Like, that's our, okay. Anyway, so yes.
I think we should start with, like, how bad are you doing? Like,
on a scale of 1 to, never mind. Okay.
You know, I'm fed. I have coffee. It's not cafe brand at all, but, you know, it'll do. So I think I'm thankful for the little things in life, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, it was raining a little while ago, so that was good. I just finished watching, actually earlier today, The Umbrella Academy season 2, and that really, like, I'm not even gonna lie, I think, like, these last months and weeks and days have been so shitty, and watching The Umbrella Academy, even if I finished it all in, like, less than a day, like, it really fulfilled my life for those hours, and it made me very happy. And it was just, like, you know when you just, like, look forward to something, like an album release, or... In this case, like, a show, and then it's just, like, so good, and you're happy for, like, again, like, those hours. That's how I felt. So, I'm actually, it made me happy. So, shout out to The Umbrella Academy, season 2. Our dad, yeah, Gerard Way, as always.
Yeah, shout out to Gerard Way.
Thank you, Dad, for giving us a little bit of joy during these rough times.
Thanks for feeding us, Dad.
Okay, so, how are you?
You know, I'm good. I'm alive.
Oh yeah, you just said good. You have coffee.
Yeah, okay. It's midnight.
We'll talk about Umbrella Academy some other time. But for now, yes, let's get down to it. So as you all of you, I'm hoping, or most of you might know, I did change my name on Instagram. It is no longer Chicanisma. It is now NFM Waves. And for those of you who don't follow me or those who missed it, I think it was a few weeks ago. I want to say four or three weeks ago. I officially changed it. I don't even know what to say about the name itself. Because even though it's been like 3 weeks or whatever, like I still don't know if I'm going to keep that name, and I hate that. If you've listened to this podcast again, or if you followed me on Twitter or whatever, wherever else I said it, I've been talking about a name change. We did one episode specifically talking about me changing my name and the reasons why I felt that way. And I want to say Yeah. It was about the Mecha, like when Mecha was going to change its name. And we had this whole conversation about Chicanismo, and we talked about Ana Castillo. Like, I don't know what episode it was, but it was called like,
Strike Mecha Light Fire.
I don't know what number it was. So anyway, the point is, this isn't like, this name change didn't happen out of nowhere. I didn't just randomly was like, let me change my name. it's been in the works, or in my thoughts, for quite some time. I just have never landed on a name that I liked, or like, if I did like it, it was taken, or just, you know, whatever. And so, like, I felt like I was getting closer to a name change. Like, I was getting there, right? But then some shit just happened, and it kind of just threw me over the edge, and I just wanted to change it immediately. So I changed it to NFM Waves, which literally just means, like, anarcho-feminism vibes, I guess. There's, like, not this, like, deep, deep meaning to it. I thought, if I wanted to change it, if I do, I can still change it to something else. So, like, in my head, I was like, it's like, I just want to change it, and it's fine, and I'll change it if I have to. it sucks, because that's not how I wanted to do a name change. I wanted to, like, tell everybody beforehand so they would be aware of it, and I wanted it to be a name that I 100% felt confident in, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? It's done. I might change it. I might not. But for now, it is what it is. But let's talk about why I changed it. so as I mentioned, like, I have a lot of reasons as to why I want to change the name to Chicanisma. And you can listen to that episode, because I really don't want to get into this whole thing again. But it kind of relates to what I'm about to talk about in a way. The reason that I changed it so suddenly, though, was because prior to that, I was receiving a lot of harassment, specifically from Chicanos, from men. And it just reinforced a lot of these feelings that I had, that I associate with Chicanismo. And like I said, that's why I was just like, I don't want anything to do with this name. Like, I don't want anything to do with fucking Chicanos, the Chicano identity, politics, like, any of it. Like, I was, that's how, like, pissed and, like, upset, or whatever I want to call it. Like, that's how bad it was for me at that time. So, the reason, though, and this is the thing, like, me and Ruben talk about this all the time, like, having a platform is not, like, easy, and it's, like, stressful, and it's frustrating, and I'm sure it's given Ruben anxiety, it gives me anxiety sometimes, like, there's this level of harassment that always comes with it, and sometimes the harassment isn't as bad, but it's still there, right? So I've dealt with, like, white people, white women, straight people even. One time I called them ugly, and, like, talking shit to me, or, like, DMing me, and, like, it just depends on what mood I'm in. Sometimes I just block them, sometimes I reply to them. However we handle that, right? But then there's, like, always, like, times where we get a flood of harassment for certain posts that we do, and it lasts a couple of days, right? So it's not just like the everyday trolls, it's like actual harassment where people are just coming at you sideways, they're DMing you, they're like mentioning you, they want you to reply to them, they go on Twitter, and then their friends join, like, it's like a whole thing, right? And I know we've talked about Ruben, like, for example, I know we talked about the Gustavo Arellano thing, like, you received a flood of harassment. That wasn't the only time, but we talked about that on one of our episodes.
Yeah, I mean, last September, I took a break from being really active online because I was getting a lot of harassment from Chicanos as well. Mainly Chicanos, specifically the type of Chicanos who do all that cultural appropriation stuff of indigenous cultures. Because I called them out in a Latinx history post, and I mean Latinx Heritage Month post, about, you know, appropriating cultures. And, you know, one of them put out like a hit on me for this one troll that has like multiple accounts. And so I was getting harassment like every day, like on all my, like, I have a media podcast, a spoilers podcast, and I was getting random shit too. Like, they would just troll all of my posts and things, and they would DM, and I just, like, I basically didn't post as much October and then some of November because of that, you know. And a part of me has also, you know, since the start, since day one, since episode one, when we even named this podcast Bitter Brown Femmes, we've both discussed wanting to change our names, right? And that's one of the reasons why the podcast itself is Bitter Brown Femmes, not Bitter Chicanos or Bitter, you know, like, we purposely did not want to label ourselves like Chicanx or even Latinx, mainly because we were both very uncomfortable with the term, despite having platforms that use the term Chicano. And so I actually, like, I was ready to change it this year as well, because I'm, like, starting grad school. I was like, okay, new chapter. And I'm waiting for one more thing, this one project to come out, and then I will be changing it after that.
This has, like, these names have, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard for me to give up that name because it's me. Like, I don't want to say it's me. It's just like, that's been my Instagram name for so long, and that's how people know me. You know what I mean? And it is hard. Like, to just kind of give it up, even though, like, we want to say, like, we don't feel like this attachment to the word Chicano, Chicanx, Chicana, right? But it's still, like, it's still hard for me. Like, I still catch myself, like, calling it Chicanismo because, and I'm sure a lot of people still will, and I'm sure, like, a lot of people were confused when they saw that name because they're like, who the fuck is this? And so, like, I don't know if I'm explaining that right, Ruben, right? Like, it's just, like, people know us by that name. Like, we've built platforms. Those have been our names. Like, it means something to me. And it is shitty, like, having to change it. And it's been hard. It's not easy. Like, I didn't want to change it at one point. I was like, you know what? It is what it is. Like, I've had this for so long. Like, it doesn't even matter to me. but at the same time, like, it does mean something. It's just like a lot of feelings that we've sat with since we've met each other, like in Portland. This was like one of the very first conversations we've had together about our feelings about all of this. So it's hard.
Yeah, I did have a lot of reservations about changing my name because I just have so much work under that mm-hmm. name. Like, you know, I'm the person and
memes, posts.
Yeah. A lot of memes are watermarked with that. You know, the whole chisme discourse is attributed to queer Chicano chisme, right? Like, you know, you saw the concept of chisme being accepted as, like, this radical thing, you know, after I popularized that framework, right? And that's not necessarily attributed to, you know, my name, Ruben Angel, but it's attributed to queer Chicano chisme. So part of me is, like, was really afraid of losing that as well.
Exactly. And that's how I feel. That's how I feel, too. So, I don't feel like there's one particular thing. Like, the chisme thing, like, I do attribute that to you. Like, I feel like you put that out there, and it should be, like, you should get everything for that. You know what I mean? Like, credit for that, I should say. But it is going to be, like, who's Ruben Angel? Like, as much as we want people to know our names, right? Like, we always talk about how, like, people don't know us. Like, people don't know my first name, even though I say it. Like, people still, you know what I mean? Like, there's things that are going to be attributed to Chicanismo. And for Chicanismo, it's even harder, I feel, not to, like, say it's more, like, it's shittier than your situation. But I feel, because, again, Chicanismo is, like, a thing already. It's not, like, queer Chicano chisme, that's you. My issues with Chicanismo was, like, Ana Castillo and, like, not just Ana Castillo, but that Chicanismo is not just, like, It's like bigger than my page, if I'm making sense here.
Yeah.
But still, in some ways, people put my face to that, which is like, it's just very complicated. Which again, I talked about all that on another episode, so I don't want to get too far into that. But just to get you a picture of what, not just me, but like Ruben as well, have feelings about our names, have feelings about Chicano politics and stuff, but also about the harassment that we receive, right? Aside from the name. So going back to the specific harassment though. So the very specific harassment that I was receiving was from Chicanos, from men. But it was in response to some posts that I had made. The first one that was about Vanessa Guillen, and not just about Vanessa Guillen, her death or about her. It was specifically about how people were using her death to be anti-Black in the sense of, you know, kind of like, this is happening, let's pay attention to this. Or like, George Floyd got this attention, why don't we give her attention? And it's always just having to bring up Black people when we're talking about someone that's non-Black, right? Like a non-Black issue, a non-Black person. Like, we always have to bring Black people into it when it's so unnecessary, right? It's anti-Black because we're comparing them and we're saying, like, essentially, like, why did George Floyd get this attention? Like, he shouldn't have.
Yeah, it's like the Latino, Latinx, like, all lives matter.
Yeah, exactly.
When we're like, why is no one talking about this? People are talking about this. You're just not following those people.
Exactly.
Right?
It's just a lot to, like, a lot of anti-Blackness, right? Because it's also, like, you're saying you're mad that this, instead of, or, like, you're saying that you're mad that these Black issues or these Black people are even got attention. Like, that you're mad about that. But anyway, so I had posted that about her, and I said what we should be saying, right? Like, instead of even bringing Black people into this conversation, what we should be talking about is the military's role in this. We're talking about imperialism, we're talking about rape culture, we're talking about machismo, we're talking about patriarchy. Like, there's so many other things to talk about in relation to Vanessa Guillen that we're not talking about. Right? Like, we just want to be anti-Black, and we're taking it away from Vanessa herself, which is disrespectful as fuck to her when you're thinking, like, in your little mind, your little anti-Black mind, that you're respecting her, honoring her somehow, when really you're not, because now we're having a conversation about anti-Blackness instead of having a conversation about her. So anyway, so that was the first thing. And then the second thing was, again, in relation to anti-Blackness, which was this paletero street vendor situation that was happening, that people were sharing videos of Black men specifically attacking street vendors, and how it turned into, of course, an anti-Black shit show. And I don't really want to get into, again, like, this whole anti-Black thing, because we've covered it. And I hope that our listeners know why that was anti-Black. And if you missed that, in short, it was, again, you know, posting a video of Black men attacking street vendors and making it a racist thing when it was not a racist thing. It was a fucked up thing, yes. But it was not this, like, Black people are going out every day and attacking Mexicans, right? because that's just not a thing. But people were trying to make it a thing so that they could be anti-Black, which is what I posted about. So those two things kind of just, you know me, kind of highlighting the anti-Blackness that I was seeing. And so a lot of people were upset by that, right? Like, because they want to believe that they're not being anti-Black and that they're just for the raza and they're just trying to uplift their people. And why do I have a problem with that? And so a lot of this was coming from Chicanos, and it started, like, in the comments, and then it started in the DMs. And with the DMs, I mean, I see them, I don't have to approve them, I could just block them, but I saw them. And, like, reading that over and over is, like, even though I don't have to respond, I could just block them, it's still annoying, you know? And then it became, and so I thought, like, okay, they'll get over it, right? Like, I get this all the time, but then it was just, like, nonstop, like, comments again and, like, DMs. And so it just became a thing. And then, like, and then I got pissed and I posted a bunch of the screenshots I was getting, and I said that men were ugly, and I posted this, like, you know, the post about how misogynist men are and how anti-black they are, and that riled him up even more. And then it just turned it, like, it was just like one thing after the other. And then I posted this thing about what Viva la Raza means. There's a lot of layers to this conversation. I'm trying to make it very short, but I posted it, and I posted screenshots of like articles that talked about it. One of the screenshots I posted was apparently like this right-wing site from a fucking also like a right-wing racist person guy, and I wish I had his name, but this is how like unaware I was. Like, when I posted it, it was because people kept asking me what I meant when I used Viva la Raza Chicanos, which was not even about the term. It was just about how a very specific brand of Chicanos. But I kept getting that question a lot. And so I was like, ugh, let me just post this real quick. And so I did. It was just like somebody else's post and I reshared it. And then I tried to, you know, screenshot articles. I did not do my research. That was my fucking fault, right? Because I usually do not do that. I usually research and read and whatever. But that was obviously my mistake. And so people were then pissed that I shared this screenshot and promoted this article, which by all means is very valid, right? But after I removed it and apologized and explained whatever, they, you know, then they held on to that and used that as a like, see, we're telling you that this Chicanismo person is like anti-Mexican and is racist and is like, you know, like they just, that was just like a leverage for them. And so it just turned into this whole thing. And that's why I was just like done, because then even when I blocked them, they then found my personal Instagram account and then were harassing me on there, even though they were saying they weren't harassing me. And it was just like, yeah, that's literally why I changed my name. Like that very night, I was very determined to change my name. That's how pissed I was and upset I was at the whole situation. So that is pretty much why I changed it. But again, it just reinforced like all these feelings I had about Chicano politics, because it was men harassing me. So it was like this conversation of like men harassing women online, obviously, but it was also like, what was the reason that they were harassing me specifically, right? It was about talking about anti-blackness and saying that I was a Chicana traitor, that I wasn't Chicana. And so if you're saying that I'm a traitor or that I'm not Chicana because I'm talking about anti-blackness in our community, then what does that say about Chicanismo, right? And yeah, we can make the argument that, you know, not all Chicanos are anti-black. Obviously not, right? But it's like the culture, that's the politics, that's what it was built on. And every time we try to make strives, like we try to make conversation about it or like dismantle it or like make any fucking progress, like it's like the same shit over and over and over. And that's why we're still having conversations about the fucking Emmys, about the paleteros, about, you know, Mexican Lives Matter, like the same bullshit over and over and over. And I know that it's not just Chicanos, like we know that it's like all non-black Latinx folks, like obviously, but we're specifically talking about the Chicano community, right? Because it's in relation to what we're just talking about, that me and Ruben have platforms that have the name Chicanx in it. But anyway, that's pretty much like a short rundown of what led to that name change.
Yeah. That is a lot. And I think we're also trying to like paint a picture of like the effort that it takes to have these conversations, because sometimes, like, for me, I just made a video about explaining the raza, and it was, like, more than 30 minutes long, right? And immediately somebody was like, this was good, now talk about this, and talk about this. And it's like, I do want to talk about this, about certain issues, and I use Bitter Brown Femmes, for example, to talk about as many things as possible. But also holding these conversations comes with not only a bunch of, like, labor of, like, you know, researching and like putting it out there and promoting it, but also like the harassment that comes, especially from men, right? Like specifically Chicanos. Like, I've said this before, but like I've not only death threats, but also like I've had, you know, men be like, you know, you're not a real Chicano because if you existed back in the day, we would have thrown you into a volcano, and like shit, like weird shit like that from Chicanos, like Chicano men. And so it's just like, it is difficult to have these conversations because people don't want to hear them. And there's no support, or there's very little support, right? And oftentimes the harassment is louder than the support, right? Like with Vanessa Guillen, I do want to go back and talk about that. It sucks that, like you mentioned, you know, discussions of anti-blackness, you know, which are necessary, right? Because, like, we can't keep comparing the death of, like, non-black people to black people, right? Because that diminishes the role of anti-black racism in state violence, right? Like that, and it, instead of placing the blame on white supremacy, we place the blame on other marginalized people. You know what I'm saying? Like the blame of, like, oh, there's no attention or there's no movement, right? Instead of, like, building our own movements, or, you know, supporting the families, right? So with Vanessa Guillen, I want to talk about how, like, her death, right? She was sexually assaulted before being murdered, and she reported it to, you know, her, I don't know what you call it, like, the top military person, sergeant, right, in her base. And after that, she was found brutally murdered, right? And so it's not only, like, if we start at the beginning, like, the violence of against Vanessa Guillen began at recruitment, like, square one. Like, why is this, like, young Latina, like, in the military, right? Like, what option, like, what decisions or lack of decisions led to that, right? And as I've mentioned before, like, this is not me saying, like, oh, not all military people, or, like, you know, like, you know, defending the military, because obviously, like, fuck the military. Like, let's start there. Like, fuck the military. But also, you know, I went to a high school that was regularly patrolled by military recruiters. I know what it was like to be preyed on by them, right? Where they specifically latch on to kids who didn't have, you know, both parents or had very little resources. And they, you know, offered them the military as an escape from poverty, right? From abuse. And so, square one with Vanessa Guillen would be like, what if we existed in a world where kids didn't have to decide between, like, you know, living in poverty and joining this violent system, right? You know, secondly, there's, of course, a discussion about rape culture. Like, it is so ingrained into not only the states and, like, patriarchy, but it is so ingrained that even reporting rape, naming it, leads to retaliation, leads to more violence, right? And so when people talk about, like, how, oh, you know, like, why didn't you report your rape, or why didn't you report this? And it's like, this is why. Because every time women and folks from marginalized genders, like, and all, you know, whenever anybody, like, really reports a rape, there's so much suspicion of the survivor. There's so much retaliation that happens, right? That it is often more dangerous for us to report sexual assault than it is to just stay silent, right? And it's horrible. And a lot of ex-military folks, particularly women, began a hashtag, I think it was, like, I am Vanessa Guillen, and they were all recounting their experiences with sexual assault, right? And I think the statistics for how many women get sexually assaulted in the military are, like, ridiculous. I think at least 1 in 4 women in the military are expected to be raped, and I think I'm lowballing it, which is already, like, which is also, like, not that much different than, like, the amount of, like, women who get sexually assaulted outside the military, right? So this is, like, a microcosm of living in rape culture, right? But it is magnified when we're talking about a patriarchal violent structure like the military, right? Which is in which is when we talk about like defunding the police and abolishing the police, like we should also have the military in mind, right? Because they're directly tied, as we're seeing in Portland, like they're one in the same force, right? So what happens when we give them all this power, right? What happens where they're one of the most well-funded things in the richest state is that they can enact this violence without penalty, right? Because we still don't have justice for Vanessa Guillen.
Yes, absolutely. And like, I don't know how to frame this, like, how many of these conversations have we seen online? And I'm not saying like, oh, me and Ruben have like the hottest takes or only us think this, but it's like when we think about Vanessa Guillen, like what are the conversations that we've seen in relation to her, right? Because yes, I saw that tag too, right, of women in the military sharing their stories, and I think that's very important.
Hashtag.
Yeah, the hashtag. But aside from that, like, it doesn't just exist, like, my thing with Vanessa Guillen is like, also, it's very important to talk about the military's role. Absolutely. She was a part of the military. I think there's so much to say about that, but that's not all there is to that. And I don't want to reduce her to just her service in the military, right? Because outside of that, she was a young Latina who, taking the military aside, like, she was a victim of rape culture, of machismo, of patriarchy, right? The fact that it happened in the military, yes, that means something, but just take the military away, like, that still exists, and that violence exists in our homes, in our communities, in our families, in our, you know what I mean, like, in, even, like, within the Chicana movement, right, talking about Chicanismo, for example, and how, like, how Chicanas had to remove themselves from the Chicano movement and start their own shit. That's why Chicanismo even became a thing. So when we're reducing it to just, like, she got killed and it's the military's fault, right? It's just, like, let's unpack that. Let's unpack that. Also, like, what are we going to, what do we want in regards to the military? Because a lot of people have been making calls like, let's pass this law so that people can come forward, or let's make it safer for women. And it's like, no, we need to abolish the whole shit. Because like, how are we also like, okay, yeah, you're making calls for women in the U.S. military to be safer. But what about the women abroad that are victims of violence by the U.S. military as well, right? Like, imperialism, like, we, like, these conversations, like, these are the conversations that I want to see in regards, in relation to her, in the relation to her death. And I feel like, just to go back on that, like, the only conversations I've seen are very, like, minimal, like, justice for Guillen. But, like, what is this justice? Like, what are we talking about when we say justice, right? Like, do you want the person that, or, like, I guess the person who did this is already gone, right? Like, they're dead. So who are we, like, the military, right? Like, I guess we're making calls for, like, the military to be held accountable for, like, her sergeant or her upper, whatever the fuck they're called. But for me, I think, like, those calls should be, like, examining the military as a whole, and also be examining, like, patriarchy and machismo, again, in our own circles, in our own communities. And then also, like, we can, well, I guess those are like the two big things, because I was going to say recruitment in high school kind of just goes into the military as well. But these are just like conversations that I'm not seeing. And it's very telling to me that what we always say, what people want to grab onto, like, what part of this story, whether it's like a tragic story or an empowering story, like, what parts do you grab onto? And then just, what parts are you comfortable fighting for or being okay with or being against, I guess I should say. Because if I'm, like, it's just, the whole thing was wild to me, because I'm like, for example, when I was getting harassment for saying this about Vanessa Guillen, these were men harassing me. And we're talking about a woman, we're talking about a young Latina, a young girl who was murdered because of, violence against women. She got, in part, murdered because of patriarchy, because of machismo. And me talking about her got me harassment from men as well. You know what I mean? Like, that correlation there. Obviously, it's not this, like, the same level of violence, obviously. But it's like, how are you going to say, like, justice for Vanessa Guillen, and at the same time you're harassing another Latina online? Like, how does that make sense in your fucking head, right? And then also, like, these protests that were happening in her name, right? Obviously, I can't dictate or, like, oh, like all the protests, people are going to have protests. But like, for example, some of the comments I was receiving, I forgot what I was talking about, but they were like, yes, you know, a lot of these Chicanos are having protests or speaking at her, like protests her name. And like, they're not even mentioning like violence against women. They're not even mentioning patriarchy and machismo and how they're complicit. They're just kind of like focusing on the fact that she was Latina. And that she died for this country and that whole narrative. And there was no like examination of how we're all like, how do you benefit from those systems as a man, right? As a Latino, I don't care if you're Latino, like it's not just white men, which is like what people, I don't know. It was just like a whole, it's just like a lot to unpack, I guess. But
yeah, I have that. I see that problem too, where it's like, why are people so comfortable talking about like, this is a Latina that died and you should care, as opposed to like patriarchy killed her, the state killed her. Like, I think people have to and that it reminds me of another incident of like patriarchal violence, right, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right, where the other white government official, I think he was also a senator, called her a bitch, right? And she gave the speech and she's like, you know, my parents didn't raise me to take abuse from men. And in the speech, she calls out, you know, white supremacist violence, particularly from white men. And she tells them, essentially, the reason that she said that one line was because she was telling this dude that he's teaching his daughters how to take abuse from men, you know, that's a normal thing. And but the thing with I don't have a problem with what she said, because I think it made sense contextually. But the problem is that, like, the only thing that people grasp from that entire incident, and really, like, Ocasio-Cortez at large, like, I have not seen so many people. Obviously, a lot of people hold her in high reverence for a lot of reasons, but a quote of hers has not made the rounds like this particular quote did. And it was because it was easy for people to talk about this, like, you know, this incident of like, you know, of harassment as opposed to talking about white supremacy that led there, you know, rape culture that led there. And overall, like Ocasio-Cortez, like politics, right? Like, why was it so easy for people to talk about this one instance where she has way more work as an environmentalist, as like, you know, a quote unquote democratic socialist, like, and that gets to a lot of like, a lot of Latinx activists and a lot of quote unquote activists and a lot of white women, it's easier for them to pick and choose what they want to be an activist about, right? So when it comes to bringing it back to Vanessa Guillen, it's easier for Latinos, right? Specifically Latino men that are speaking at, you know, her events and shit. Like, it's easier for them to be like, Latinos are being attacked as well, as opposed to like, you know, the military industrial complex, you know, as opposed to rape culture, as opposed to, you know, the underfunding of communities, which led Vanessa Guillen to be in the military, right? Like, there's so many other things that led to this violence, but because we're so stuck on, like, being anti-black, we reduce a lot of this violence to, like, we should care about her because she's Latina, right? Not like we should care about her because she's a woman that was raped, right? And murdered.
Yes, absolutely. And I think I'm glad you mentioned the AOC thing, because I think it fits into what we were talking about, especially like what we always talk about. Specifically with quote unquote Latinx representation, because people, they claim they don't have it, right? Just a separate conversation about representation. But any like big Latinx person, Latina, that's like up there, like you want to hold on to like everything, like you want to put them in this high standard, and I don't know how to explain it, like non-black Latinx are looking for someone, whether it's like a celebrity, a politician, even not just like for empowerment, but also like these little issues, like what can we use, like, to make it about ourselves as non-black Latinx people versus, like, what it is, right? Like, the paleteros that I was mentioning. Like, it's like, oh, we found an issue that affects us, that we're being attacked, that we're being victimized, and so now we're going to use it, right? Versus like street vendors being harassed all year specifically by cops, or not, and like the state itself and like these laws that like prevent them from like being street vendors, right? Like that whole conversation. And it's just like with Vanessa Guillen, it's like, oh, there's this young Latina who got killed. And I'm sure that a lot of people, obviously, like, I'm not saying that they're happy that she got killed, obviously not, but it was like, it's like a chance for us to be like, look, it happens to us too, versus like, why did this happen? And like, how can we talk about that, right? It's like a very, but it's just like this thing that we always do, right? And so like with AOC, she is like that politician, right? And so we're going to hold on to everything that she says. If she wears red lipstick, if she wears hoops, we're going to hold on to that because it represents us somehow, versus like what you said about her, like everything.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me, is that like when she, that's what fucked, and I made a video about this too, like a year ago. And that's what gets me about these conversations too, it's because I've already had them. So when people hear our frustration, it's like, it's because I've already had this conversation. But with AOC, for example, why were more people talking about her lipstick in the Latinx community than they were talking about her politics? Why do we find it so difficult to have conversations about people's politics, specifically when they represent us, when they're part of the Latinx community, right? And so with her, like, I really wish, and this is like no shade to her, like at all, like I have my own issues with her, but at the end of the day, like I see her as like a some good, and I know that's gonna take away my leftist card, but you know, it is what, like, that's just how I feel, like, but I would see her as more of a good if I saw, like, social attitudes actually change because of her. Because how many of the Latinas, you know, the empowered Latinas are like, you know what, I'm a socialist now because of AOC, you know, instead of, like, using her as, like, the sign of, like, women empowerment, of, like, women in the boardroom and in the Congress and all that, instead of, like, hey, maybe socialism is the way to go. Like, look at what this Latina is saying, you know? And so that's what fucks with me about a lot of these conversations.
No, I get that. And I feel like that's what I mean with her. And it, like, we, and I would like to see, because, like, we've talked about some of the issues that we have with her, right? And it's just, like, I'd rather have people critiquing her, and not to, like, drag her, because there's a difference, right? Like, I'm not like, let's go, I'll go harass her. Like, obviously not. But I think if a lot of people were actually paying attention to her politics and engaging with it, then we can be critical of her. And then that could lead to bigger conversations. You know what I mean? So it's not necessarily like, oh, let's go all shit on her and drag her because she said this one thing. But it's like, if people actually engage with her work, then we'd be like, oh, you know what? I don't like that she said that. Like, how do we challenge her on that? Or how do we, you know what I mean? Like, there's no conversations happening. It's all just like, oh, she wore hoops and she's from the Bronx. And literally, like, that's fucking it. Like, I'm questioning now, like, obviously I'm not trying to compare myself to AOC, but I'm like, I wonder if people do that with me on some level, right? Like, because I notice, like, when I post what I feel is basic ass shit, like, obviously people like that, they engage with that more, right? Versus when I'm calling out anti-blackness or I'm calling out and literally anything else, I come across more, like, people consume me that way. Like, it's easier for them to be like, oh yeah, I fuck with her. And like, she said that Latinas are great, for example. I never said that. But let's say that I said that, right? And like, I would never say that. No, but you know what I mean? Like, if I post something, and sometimes I feel like I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, one time someone tagged me on Facebook and they had made their, like, header, like, a quote of mine or kind of just tagged me, right? And I felt honored, but when I looked at the quote that it was a very interesting thing for me to see, I guess, because I felt that I don't remember what the quote was, but it was a very, like, for me, I felt like, I'm like, I've said a lot of, I don't know, better shit than that, which sounds, I'm not trying to, like, shit on that person, you know what I mean? But it's, like, interesting, like, what parts people, like, gravitate towards, if that makes sense, right? So anyway, but yeah, and I'm sure, yeah, a lot of people would like me more if I was, I don't know, wearing hoops and shit. But anyway,
when we go to, like, what is the problem with, like, not calling out like our own community or ourselves when we know, or you know, what is the problem when we compartmentalize certain people to the parts of them that serve ourselves, is that we end up letting a lot of oppressive behaviors pass, right? So when people reduce Vanessa Guillen to, you know, why are people not talking about Vanessa Guillen as opposed to, you know, all the other violence, then that leaves the military-industrial complex to wash its hands of their violence, right? That leaves, you know, men to not have to address rape culture and patriarchy, right? That leaves the state to not have to acknowledge, like, poverty and systemic racism, right? So, and when it comes to AOC, when we focus only on these parts that, like, speak to us, or that, you know, that are reductive, then we miss out on, like, critiquing her, like you mentioned, which we've both done before. I've made a video again. So if people want to see those critiques, they can go to youtube.com/CritiqueOnChiefsMan, because I'm just not going to go over it again. And it also, like, how many graphics of, like, the Green New Deal did you see? Like, how many paintings of, like, Alexandria talking about why we need to save the fucking planet through this Green New Deal, which looks really good, by the way. People should fucking read the Green New Deal. Like, how many of posters have been made? Like, I don't think I've seen a single one. And that's something that she's devoted, like, most of her time in Congress to. Basically all of her time. As soon as she came into Congress, she was like, Green New Deal, we need to do this. And that's what she's been fighting for. But you don't see shit like that. Instead, as soon as she joined in Congress, she is always lipsticks and hoops. And then it became, my parents didn't teach me to take abuse from men, as opposed to all these other things that are really going to impact our daily lives, right? And so, I bring up the fact that our lack of introspection and our lack of a critical eye leads to damage and leads to letting certain people get away with shit. Because, you know, recently the CEO of Remezcla, as well as their editor-in-chief, were outed as abusers, right? And because Remezcla represents such an empowering platform to a lot of people, it was largely ignored. If you were not in the scene, right, of writers, of editors, of, like, big social media presence, you know, you were not in the know. Remezcla itself has not really addressed it. They put out one statement, and they only published it on... They published it on the site, but they didn't put it on their platforms, right? So you only found it if you were looking for it. But essentially, there was a Jezebel article that came out that outed the CEO. I forget his name. I think his name is Andres Herrera. And the CEO of Remezcla and the editor-in-chief, Eduardo Cepeda, outed them as abusers. They were, you know, they intimidated all of their female staff, particularly the Latina female staff, because the white women on staff loudly said on Twitter that they never experienced abuse and they still talk to the men. So it was very racialized as well as gendered abuse that happened. And it was a very detailed account of how much abuse these Latinas had to endure at Remezcla. And everybody largely ignored it. Remezcla, like their platform, they still have hella followers. And that happens because we are not critical of the things we consume, right? We're not critical of our representation. And specifically, we're not critical of men when it's time to do so. Specifically, men are not critical of themselves. Importantly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with Remezcla, I think it's, you know, we're talking about men, rape culture, misogyny, But it's also like what Remezcla's, it's also ties into our conversation about AOC and empowerment, right? Because Remezcla is like a platform where people are like, this is for like a Latinx platform and it's about us. And it does feel empowering, right? Like there's a platform and a website that's like about Latinx issues or music or fashion or whatever. And that is really cool. Yeah. But because not everything has to be political. Let me start there. Like, you can have a platform and it could be fucking about, I don't know, something that's not political, right? But at some point, like, you still have to make, and there's another conversation of, like, what we find political, right? Not everything's political also, but it's like, if you don't have a basis, like, a very minimal basis of, like, what your ideals, whether that's, like, racism, sexism, like, a very basic shit, right? That all platforms or all businesses, all companies should have. Then you're like, I don't know how to explain it. Then you're just so what I'm trying to say is, like, I don't think Remezcla is necessarily just a political platform, right? Like, they talk about music, they talk about all these other things, but at the same time, they should still be rooted in those ideals, right? It's like, so they should still like be held accountable and still create an environment that's free of sexism, of racism, especially because like you are a Latinx platform, like that means something. So for them to be like a Latinx platform that people deem empowering, whether they're political or only a little political, whatever the fuck, like they still should be held to that standard of like, you are like, and that probably didn't make a lot of sense.
No, I think it's just like, you don't just get to be empowering. Like you don't just get, cause that's, I feel like that's, and I'm sorry to say this, but I feel like that's cheap. It's cheap to just be this positive, empowering person without a critical eye for shit. Like, what you're saying is eventually, like, what does all this empowerment mean if you're actively being disempowering behind the scenes, right? Those two things cannot go together. If who you are behind the scenes does not match who you are in the public eye, then that needs to be questioned and that needs to be taken out of the equation.
Yes, yes, thank you. Absolutely. And so I'm sorry, while you were talking and saying, you know, how you mentioned that a lot of people still fuck with Remezcla, number one, a lot of people don't know. And that says something. Maybe, you know, I want to say, well, you're not following, you know, the writers, you're not in like within these circles, you didn't see it, you missed it, right? A lot of people missed it. They didn't see it. Remezcla didn't even post a fucking apology. Half-ass apology it would have been, but not even that. They posted some half-ass apology on their site, which a lot of people don't necessarily go, I'm going to go to Remezcla.com. They just click on an article. They click on the article to read it, but they don't, you know, they're not on there. So that was very intentional. But for the people that did see it, I'm pretty sure a lot of people saw it and were kind of like, you know, well, I'm sure it'll figure itself out, or they removed him or whatever. Anyway, I was pulling up, because I posted it on Instagram, right? And so when I changed the name, going back, when I changed the name, I didn't post for a few days because I was sitting with it and I didn't want to confuse people. And that's when the Remezcla thing went public. And I was like, damn it, like, I really want to post about this, right? Because I want to support these women and I want to call it out, obviously. And so the first post I think I made once I was like, hey, I changed my name, whatever, was about Remezcla. And I was kind of disappointed that it didn't get a lot of likes, and not in a superficial way, but because I thought a lot of people would engage with it or share it or like it, because it's about fucking Remezcla. Like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people that follow me know what Remezcla is and follow that platform, right? And it only got like 2,000 likes. And I know some of you are probably like, wow, that's a lot of likes. But compared to like other posts of mine have gotten like 6,000, 4,000, even higher. And I honestly thought that post would go viral on my page, and it didn't. Like, a lot of people didn't even engage with it at all.
And more important than likes is like action.
Yeah, definitely.
Like sustained action, like were people commenting on Remezcla's page to some, like, mm-hmm.
Some people were,
but it died down.
Like, it died. Like, yeah. That's what I was looking for right now. I actually think they removed it. They didn't post anything that was like, oh, this is our statement. Yeah, they removed it. So, like, people just went to their latest post, and at that time, they had shared this video of Walter Mercado, because that was when the documentary came out, I remember specifically. So yeah. A lot of people were commenting on that video, and they were like, how are you, you know, there are some people that were commenting, you know, what the fuck? But if you go through it, like, they didn't respond. It's like all these comments of them being shitty and then regular people commenting about Walter Mercado. So it's just like, and they still haven't posted anything. I would assume that if you're like, if you would at least have the decency to make a fake apology about it. The only thing that happened was that, and they actually follow me, but okay, anyway, the only thing that happened was that the editor-in-chief, Eduardo Cepeda, was resigned, or like, I want to say he resigned. But the CEO has not resigned and refuses to resign. So like, I felt like he probably thought like, oh, well, I'm gonna let him go.
Yeah. And that was one of the demands, is to have him resign, the editor in chief and the CEO.
Mm-hmm. And only one of those things happened. So that is not, I haven't seen any conversation about it. I really haven't. I don't know. I just thought in my head, like, this was a big thing and I haven't seen shit about it. And it's really, and it leads me to another thing, which is, you know, yes, we're talking about empowerment, we're talking about these platforms, whatever, but it's also like men. Going back to the root of what we're trying to talk about in this episode is like men, right? And specifically these men are Latinos. It's like men just kind of using women's labor for their own advancements because... But it is this conversation of, like, men have always, like, profited off of, like, women's labor, specifically. Also, like, queer people, of course. And it's, like, they get all the credit for it. And that's, like, reminds me of Remezcla. Because, yeah, it's, like, men and women, you know, it's, like, a platform. But, like, who's the CEO, right? A man. Who's the editor-in-chief, right? A man who apparently got this job... Like, they gave, like, there was a Latina who was up for that position, and they gave it to this bitch, who I know personally, by the way, which I'm not going to share my story with him, but I know this person personally, Eduardo Cepeda, whatever. But anyway, he's a piece of shit. But anyway, I'm not talking about him,
but he's a piece of shit. I'm not going to talk about him, but he's a piece of shit.
He also, like, did some shady shit to me, too, so it wasn't surprising, but I don't really want to get into... that guy. I just want to say that so there's like these powerful men in power, like they're the CEOs or editors in chief, so they have that power to abuse women, but they're also like profiting off of these women who are writing and researching and devoting their time, right, like to this platform. Because I'm like, let's be real, like women, queer folks, like we are, like, trans people, like, we are, like, the creative ones. We're the one. Not only are we the ones doing all the fucking work and labor to keep these movements alive, but we are the creative ones. I'm sorry. Like, it has to be said. What are, like, men even... What are you doing? Like, you're not even funny. So, yeah, you are profiting off of women and our work and our intelligence and everything else, like, that we do, right? Because you benefit in one way or another, whether that's, like, at a fucking platform, at a remezcla, or whether that's, like, you following my work, because even if you don't engage with it, like, you still learn something, okay? Even if you don't agree with it. And also, like, women and queer folks and trans folks literally putting their lives on the line in these movements, doing community work for your whack ass, like, to not get shot by the cops, essentially, right? and this has always been a thing since the 1960s, and so... It's just, like, fucking exhausting. Like, I think, like, that whole week was exhausting for me because I went from that harassment and then having to read, like, this Remezcla bullshit was also, like, infuriating, especially by a guy that I know personally as well. And one thing, I know I'm, like, I'm not going to talk about him, but one thing that I do have to add about him was, like, pretty much I didn't return his advances. And then he got, you know... Like, a lot of men do. Like, they get upset about it. And then they start talking shit about you. And with me, specifically, he's not the first guy to do it. But with me, like, the way that men attack me when I don't reciprocate, like, those feelings is, like, attacking my politics and my work and making me sound like an... You know, this was a few years ago, so I feel like people now are more like on the feminist wave or on like the woke wave, quote unquote. But back then,
would you say they're on the anti-fem wave?
They're on the yes, I love that. They were kind of like, I was like the angry feminist bitch on Twitter locally, right? And so it was easy for him. Like, I have screenshots of him saying like that people like me make him want to be a Republican, and like that people should just stop talking about politics, and like I'm annoying, and like attacking all of these things that I stood for. And then, you know, I didn't even hear from him. Like, I didn't see him, whatever. And then like a few years later, I see that he's writing at La Mezcla and I'm just like, okay. And yes, people change. Okay. Obviously. Right. But it's just like that. So then it's like, you didn't change though.
People change, but at whose expense? That's what always fucks with me, is that like, yes, people change, but who had to suffer for that change? And that fucks with me immensely, because this type of grace is never given to women. This type of grace is never given to queer and trans people. It is specifically for cishet men. And so, without being specific, there were a lot of deaths by popular figures that happened in recent years, right? And people, and they were men who did some fucked up shit. And I'm not being specific, because there were a lot of men that fit this category. And when people brought up their sordid past, people were like, well, they had time to change. Maybe they changed. And it's like, okay, but who had to suffer for that change, right? Who still has to live with the consequences of that change, right? And so for a lot of these men, some of them who were seen as good people, like, their survivors were actually harassed after these men died, right? So, like, that patriarchal violence continued in the name of this person after their deaths, right? So, this whole, like, people change shit, it's like, for who gets to change, right? And who gets canceled? When we talk about cancel culture and whether it's real or not, it's like, it is very unreal for those in power, but it is very real for those of us who are the most marginalized, right? And then going back to, like, you know, men profiting from the work of women and LGBT folks and non-binary folks and so forth, La Mezcla wouldn't be what it is without the direction of Andrea Gonf, right? It would not be, or Knopf, I don't know how to say her last name, and Yara Simón. Yara Simón was a cultural editor for years, ever since I knew of La Mezcla. You know, I've written for La Mezcla in the past, and I always reported to these two women. And without Anne Isabella Herrera, all three of them who are no longer at that publication because of this harassment, in large part. Yara Simón, she posted a statement when all of this came to light, and she was like, there's a reason that I'm no longer in media. Like, the situation was so bad that she quit media altogether, right? Isabella Herrera left to pursue work in other fields, and Andrea Gonf did as well. So, like, this harassment and, like, this, you know, this evolution of men literally came at the expense of these three women that I know from the top of my head, right, that I've worked with. So I'm very reserved about, like, this extending this people change bullshit when people cause harm, which I know it's like, and but at the same time, I do know that, like, as abolitionists, like, we shouldn't be like in this like punishment mindset. But when people have not faced any accountability, that's mm-hmm. the problem, right? The problem is, like, I don't like, I'm not saying, like, you know, arrest these people or, like, you know, like, cancel arrest these her. People, right? Lock her but up. The survivors, right? But, like, the survivors of the abuse basically have said, like, you know, their needs, right? Their needs are to get deplatform these men. And that hasn't happened. So no amount of learning from these men will make up for the fact that these women have specific demands to repair the harm that they've done, right? So that's what I'm getting at. Like, yes, no to a carceral state, but yes to repair that only happens when we listen to the victims of abuse and the victims of harm, right? Does that make sense to you?
No, everything you said makes sense. Because I was going to say a few things, like, I was going to say, quote unquote, he changed, because that's where I was getting at. Like, I was going to say, yeah, like, I thought, oh, okay, he changed. Like, I should be happy, or I should be like, okay, cool. But then it's like, you didn't change though, bitch, obviously, because you're out here harassing women. So it's like, you, and that's like the progression that we think men make, like that we're specifically men, right? That we're like, oh, they changed, but then it's like, did they? Or they just put on an act now, right? Or are they just using this language now and fooling us into thinking that, like, have they actually been like, hey, I did this a few years ago, like, here it is. No, they don't do that, right? And then I was going to also talk about, like, how we reserve that for men specifically, right? And we always talk about cancel culture too, and like, you know, if it's real, if it's not real. But one thing we know for sure is that it's always like marginalized people that get like the shittiest end of the stick, in particular, like Black women, trans women, right? And when that happened, earlier I was talking about how like I posted that right wing screenshot article, right? Like, I don't think that people were necessarily like, cancel her, lock her up. Like, they didn't necessarily say.
It was just me.
It was just Ruben. They didn't specifically say those words, but that's definitely what it felt like, on top of like the harassment that I was already receiving. And it felt really shitty to me, because I felt like men get to say like the whack, like, and not just say, but like do abusive shit all the time. And like, you all do not have this energy for them. Like, people on Instagram and Facebook were like, I think it was like a mixture of like, obviously like having to sit with like the post itself, which was like the Viva la Raza shit that people were uncomfortable with. But then it was also like, because they didn't want to sit with that, it was easier for them to latch on to like this post, this article, right? Like, they're like, well, you posted this article, so therefore all of this is automatically like wrong, right? Instead of like, oh, this one particular article is wrong, maybe you should remove it, right? It was just like, I posted this, and so now I'm going to latch onto that. And so like, people were just like, and like, this was the thing, like, it took me like a few hours, I think the next day even, to like remove it, because I got so much anxiety from all the comments that I didn't want to read the comments, you know what I mean? And like, I think like people don't even give me space to do that. They're kind of just like waiting for me to like a lot of people hate follow me. Like, I know that for a fact. And they're just waiting for you to like fuck up so they can jump on it, right? And that's what it felt like. It felt like the harassment from the men, and then it felt like all of a sudden I was like promoting, it was like not like, oh, Cassandra or Chicanisma posted this like right wing thing. It was like, I am promoting propaganda, which is like, to me, like this whole other level, like that I'm actively promoting the shit, that it wasn't just like, oh, it was a mistake, obviously, that it was just like this ongoing thing that I did on top of like people saying that I'm a Trump supporter, which, you know, that was stupid. But on top of all these other things, like, people just want to jump on me for, like, every single thing, and I never fucking see, like, I didn't even see that energy for the mezcla. And so, like, I was just, like, I don't have, like, space to do that. And then, on top of that, it was, like, people trying to use the way I come across against me, kind of, like, well, you always critique people, like, why can't we critique you, right? And it's, like, I don't, like, it was just a lot. And so, that whole week was, like, very stressful for me.
And it's also disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And it's disingenuous because, like, a lot of the time you're critiquing people in power. Like, and that's what happens when we flatten things to, like, our attitude or things like that. Like, when you come off, like, angry, quote unquote, or, like, you know, you're dragging people, it's like you're not dragging, like, your local, like, you know, random person. You're usually dragging people who are in power, who have, you know, if not direct power, like politics, then, like, you know, power under patriarchy, power under white supremacy, you know. Whereas with you, it's like, you fucked up, but not only do you have this history of not, like, of like being, of like not fucking up, of being progressive, but also, like, you're a woman of color, like, you're working class, like, you are not someone who is in power. Like, people can point to your popularity, but at the end of the day, like, you're not some, like, person who has control over people's lives, right? In the way that, say, somebody like, you know, the editor of the editor and the CEO of Remezcla did, right? So that is something else that people miss when they just want to come at you sideways, right? Yeah. And of course, it's not saying that you're, like, completely devoid of critique. Like, I also had a conversation with you when this happened, right? But I wasn't like, fuck you, Cassandra, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was, like, trying to discuss, you know, what led to that.
Definitely. So that was just that, I guess. And then on top of that, I also felt like, you know, going back to, like, work that we do, I always feel like I try to downplay the work that I do on some level. Like, I'm like, oh, I just, you know, post some things and whatever, and it's not this big of a deal, right? Because I'm trying to be modest, or I'm just like, in my head I'm like it's not as like good as like what other people are doing, I guess. And but in that moment I did feel like I do work, and I've done work outside of this platform, but if we're talking specifically about this platform, for 4 years, and obviously some of those years weren't good, right? Like, my politics have progressed, but nonetheless, like, I still put a lot of labor into my platform. And so, like, in that moment, I did feel like everything that I had ever posted was kind of just, like, invalid because of this one thing. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, all the work that I did, yeah, as a woman, as a brown woman, as a Latina, whatever you want to call me, like, all of a sudden, like, everything that I've ever said was just, like, gone. Like, it was trash because of this one thing. But again, going back to, like, men, it's, like, they can do as much shitty things as they want, and sometimes they don't have to apologize for it, and it's totally cool. But another thing that I wanted to go back to what you said about, also just, like, how people change and how it's hard for us to, like, look at men, specifically abusive men, and be, like, giving them that space to quote-unquote change or whatever, because there hasn't been accountability, right? And that was one thing that I was struggling with too recently, in regards to abolition, right? Because we do, you know, so abolition is, like, not just, like, abolish the police, but it's also just, like, abolishing all these systems, right? Prisons, the military-industrial complex, and abolition at its core, it's like trying to see the humanity in people and how, you know, what are the roots of these issues and how do we become better people? How do we build as a community that's not rooted in punishment? Because that doesn't give people room to change, right? But it, as a woman, as queer people, trans people, like people, marginalized people who are directly affected by patriarchy specifically, it's so fucking hard sometimes to think of that. And it's fucked up, but I want to be very real about that, right? Because, for example, another thing that happened, like, 2 weeks or a week after this happened, like, all of these things happened in, like, an order, in El Paso specifically, there have been, like, call-outs of abusive men, and particularly in our bar scene. Like, I want to say bar scene, music scene, right?
The lively El Paso.
The lively El Paso scene. God. God, Jesus. And it's one particular bar. I'm not even going to get into that. That's just like, okay. But then these conversations started happening. And so I saw it on my personal news feed, right? Because it's like, it was a local thing of just seeing a lot of women and young girls, like, outing these abusive men. And it's like, just seeing it over and over. And also, like, being someone that was a young 14 years old who this happened to as well, like, not just one time, but, like, throughout, like, being a teenager, it's like, it's ugly, right? And it's just like, how do you, like, how do I sit here and say, like, I don't want to punish these men, or, like, how do I even have hope for these fucking men, right? After seeing that over and over and over, and you're just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is, like, where do we go? Like, how do I, as an abolitionist, like, even go from here, right? And it's, like, hard work. It really is. But it's also, like, the same time, like, it is rooted in that, in rape culture and patriarchy and machismo and, like, these power dynamics that we never, I don't want to say we never critique, because women and queer folks, trans folks have always critique patriarchy much because we're the victims of that. We're survivors of that, right? So it's like, it's, I don't want to say that it's never talked about. It's just that men who are the perpetrators have never done the work to like dismantle any of this. And it's like this, it's like we have to put up with this abusive shit and we have to hold your hand in space and forgive you and hold you accountable even when you don't want to be accountable. Like, your homeboys aren't even doing that. But yet your homeboys are sitting here saying they're allies or they're feminists or whatever the fuck. And so it's like this, it's like all of this shit and it's so exhausting. And that was one of the things I posted about Chicanos. It's not just Chicanos, but when I was talking about Chicanos and how, you know, they're very out here like Viva la Raza, brown power, brown pride, Atzlan, whatever, like real badass activists, quote unquote, online. But then like, what do they do? That's my question. Because when I examine, like, what do, not just Chicanos, but just, like, cishet men, like, what do? That is my question. And if you're listening, and the thing is, like, you're probably not listening. Because this is the thing. Like, cishet men don't do shit. They don't listen to podcasts that they should be to, like, engage with queer people, with women. They don't fucking go to protests. I'm sorry, you don't. Only when it's like a mainstream thing, you hardly are ever organizing in community. And when you are, you're just abusing people and creating a toxic environment. So like, what the fuck do you do? Because you don't even critique machismo and patriarchy, which is like the number one thing you're familiar with. And it's just like, what for what? Like, we're doing the work and then we're also being harassed on top of it. And then we're also getting, our work is also being erased at the same time. And so it is very, like, it's just been very, ugh. I'm like, eh. I don't even know the words to say it. But one thing that always, like, it leaves me, like, what the fuck, is that men themselves, like, can't even do anything in regards to patriarchy. Because one of the questions, right, about, that I've gotten sometimes, like, on Talks with Machismo is, like, how do I feel about men's rights? Let's say, for example. And I don't have an issue with men's rights. I don't. If men want to create a club that's, like, for men, I want you to fucking have a club that's for men. But I want you to talk about patriarchy. I want you to talk about machismo. I want you to talk about trans men, about queer men, about black men. Those are the conversations and clubs y'all should be having. But instead, you form men's clubs that are just devoted to harassing women. So, yeah, I would love it that men create their own platforms to talk about machismo, to talk about rape culture. And around that time, I'm Kat Lazo, who's a who's like a, she was a YouTuber, she's a journalist, she's a media personality, right? She, at that time, she had started this, like, I want to say it's like, I don't want to say it's maybe a campaign, like, where it was like unpacking men. She was trying to get people to have conversations about this. And I'm not trying, I'm obviously not shitting on Kat, but I was just like, why does Kat have to do this? Why does a woman have to do this? Why can't you all start your own fucking hashtags, create your own YouTube channels, start a podcast, do fucking something? You know, like, I was just like, again, I'm not shitting on Kat. I obviously, like, this is like what we feel we have to do because no one is doing it. But I'm like, why does a woman have to do this shit? And, like, you all probably didn't even engage with her work that she probably, like, spent so much time doing, you know, like, researching or, like, putting labor into. And it's just, like, it makes me, like, fucking pissed.
Yeah, that's one thing I was thinking, too, of like, the fact that, like, Kat, like, they needed a woman, like, a woman of color to hold their hands to have these conversations. And at the end of the day, a lot of men with platforms were not even the ones having the conversations. Like, it was a lot of, like,
women,
men without platforms, and women who were like having these conversations for Kat Lazo's initiative, right? And instead, she got so much harassment from this campaign and so much stress from it that she like took a break from leading these conversations. And it's just like, men not only want to be in power and exude and enact violence when they're in power, but then when we try to help them change their way, then they still enact more violence. And then on top of all the labor that we have to do for them, right? And it's funny that you mentioned, like, men don't listen to this podcast. They don't. Like, I think officially, like, 10% of our followership is men, right? And that is assuming that Instagram's, like, algorithm, mm-hmm. like, And that's with Instagrams and like Twitters and other algorithms, like not counting non-binary people. So like, I'm wondering how many like non-binary people were like mm-hmm. misgendered in that calculation. You know what I mean? So the point of that being is that like, they don't listen to feminist podcasts or like, you know, critical podcasts because it's not beneficial to them. It is more beneficial for them to keep enacting violence and staying in power than it is for them to do any work that would disempower them, right? Because a part of like undoing machismo is denouncing some of that power that it has, that you have unfairly gained by virtue of being a man, specifically being a cis man, and even more specifically being a cis het man.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't know if you remember, so we did one of our talks in California. I'm sorry, I forget what city it was, and I apologize, what university and what city it was, but it's the one where we were standing up. We always see that.
Yeah.
Okay. And one of the questions, so we do a Q&A, or we take questions after it.
You didn't like standing up?
It's just that it was like this awkward, like, I felt awkward, we were just standing. Yeah. Okay, anyway. There was a question that we got at the end of our talk, and it was like a woman who... I think was kind of, I don't remember what the wording was, but was kind of essentially saying that feminism was like anti-men, something along those lines, right? And I forgot, I think she had also, it was a women's conference, and I think she had implied that the conference excluded men, something along those lines. And Ruben was like, where are they? Like, this thing isn't just for women, so where are they? Period, right? Like, that was it. And it's like, men should come to these conferences, and obviously men are not, they shouldn't be welcome in all, some of the spaces are not for men, right? Let's start there, like that. But if there is a conference and no one is keeping you from coming to this conference, right? So where are you? And like, men just don't show up, and that's what you, exactly what you just said, it's not beneficial for them to be here. Like, why would they be here? Even like when we've done like direct action things, I'm trying to think of like one, there was like 6 women, we're all queer too, but like 6 women and like 2 guys that show up to like a direct action. And that's just not a one instance. That's like, I read the room. Where are the men in this community organizing space? Where are the men at these protests that aren't just for like photo ops, right? That are like actually like engaging. You actually showed up to the meetings. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's hard, like, it's all mostly, I swear to you, like, women, queer people, trans people, the most marginalized, because we don't, like, they don't have anything to lose. And particularly, like, Latinos, non-Black Latinos, like, for example, like, what do they face, right? Racism. Like, their main thing is, like, white supremacy and decolonize and maybe capitalism. But it's like, you want to be white men. Like, that's pretty much what you want to do, because you're not really, you don't want to let go of any power. You want to gain power, more power than what you already have. So, go.
Yes, yes, very that, girl. And that gets to my root of my problem with, like, empowerment-only activism, is that at the end of the day, it's not very concerned with destroying the systems. It is more concerned with gaining power under them, right? And so thank you for like bringing me to that conclusion. Like, you talking right now really helped me with that. And also to bring up that incident in that conference, it was like, I have been an organizer a very fucking long time. That type of conference, I've thrown many of those already. And you know, I've supported women's conference, LGBT conferences, all different shades of conferences. The attendanceship is always women. Even when it's like not specifically about women, it will always be like primarily women at these conferences. And it is also primarily women and like non-binary folks and queer folks like organizing these conferences, right? There is no amount of like pushing men to join these types of like discussions that will get them to join. Like, there is none. I have organized men's conferences as well. And men's spaces. Oh my god, the amount of work I've done. It's not like patting myself on the back, it's just like how tired I am. But when I was in UC Davis, I helped build a seminar for Latino men to, like, succeed in school, because Latino men, Latinx men, Latinos, they are, like, top three of, like, most likely to drop out from college, right? And a lot of it has to do with men, specifically Latino men, being raised under machismo and being raised to not ask for help, being raised to not be vulnerable, right? So patriarchy, like, hurts them too, but they don't want to face it because they still feel this sense of, like, toxic empowerment from it. You could bring a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, is the old saying, right? And it's an old saying, and it keeps proving true, because there's so much truth in that. You can't make men want to give up power, even when that power is hurting them, right? And that's clown behavior, right? That's clown week. Like, that's like,
we're coming full circle.
Yeah.
In case you missed it, who the clowns are.
Yeah. Like, it is clown behavior that you cannot identify the behavior that is keeping you from succeeding. In this case, like, Latino men, and, you know, on top of all the systemic racism. Obviously, I'm not saying that, like, you know, it's men, it's Latino men's fault that they're not graduating. Like, obviously, it's a systemic issue, but it impacts these specific groups the most because of a lot of social, like, social formation, right? And so, all I was to say is that, like, you can make as many conferences as you want, and men won't come. Right, and we're speaking directly to Latino men because that's our community and that's what we have experience with. But I'm certain it's the same across demographics, right?
Absolutely. And one thing for me is, like, you know, you mentioned that patriarchy, machismo hurts men, and it does. It does. But I'm actually at a point, I think, in my career, in my life, in my thinking, I don't know, where I'm just like, I don't give a shit. I'm getting to that point where I'm like, I don't give a shit. Because one of the things, like, when I talk about machismo, when I've done talks on machismo, I always include a part about how it hurts men. I always reference that, right? Because I think that we think that if we say this is hurting you, this also affects you negatively, then you are going to be like, hey, that's whack. But like you said, they're clowns. So I'm just like, what's the point of me centering you? Because at some point I am centering you. I'm centering how you're being affected by this. I'm centering how this system fucks you up, how it doesn't let you cry, how it doesn't let you feel, how it says that you're inherently violent, which that should fucking offend you. And I'm like making space for you, and then you still don't give a shit. So I'm literally at a point where, again, I'm like, why should I tell you that this is hurting you so that you can... I think another reason for that is that there's a lot. It's like, we think that you're gonna, if we say this is hurting you too, not just me, then your selfish ass might do something about it, because you should be able to care if we're saying you're hurting me, but you don't. So we have to say it's hurting you too, but then you still don't care. And then it's also like, a lot of us do care about men as much as we hate it, right? Because for a lot of reasons, like, you're a part of my community, you're a friend, you're a brother, you're a cousin, like, the way they do that shit to us, right? Like, for them to care about us, oh, she's someone's sister, like, I'm doing that shit to you, right? Like, I have to think about you that way, because it's really hard to fucking care about you, violent assholes. And so it's like, we want to care about you, we want you to be better, we want us to be better, we want our community to be better, and it's fucking hard. Like, why should we care about you? Why should I make this 10, like, why should I reserve 20 minutes of my talk to talk about you when you don't give a shit, right? Like, why should I do that work? Why should I center you? Like, I'm kind of at that point where I don't, like, I've told myself, if I ever do another talk on machismo, like, I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm not. As much as it's true, like, I'm done. Like, I think we need to stop doing that. We need to stop trying to save these men, you know? Cancel on.
Cancel men.
It's like...
Lock them up.
Lock them up. Lock them up.
What do you think about men's rights? Well, yeah, Cassandra's running for mayor. What's your campaign?
Rights. Men, zero rights. But no, it's like, I mean, we're got into that point, and like, I think men are just like, we're going to keep doing, women are going to keep showing up, women, are, they're going to keep, like, we had talked about Juno Diaz on one of our episodes, so again, we've talked about machismo, we talked about sexism, rape culture, all of these things, but I'm referencing that Juno Diaz episode, because I remember talking about how someone had DM'd me to share, like, this video of their brother being harassed or taken away by LAPD, and then, like, I find out that the reason LAPD went to the house was because her brother, whoever this person was like abusing his wife. And I'm just like, do I condone police brutality? Absolutely not. Do I say fuck the cops? Absolutely. But how are you turning to because who's going to rally behind you? Latinas online that are going to be like, oh, free him, or like, let's draw attention to this LAPD video or whatever, when the reason that they were even there was because you were abusing a woman, another Latina? Get the fuck out of here. And that's like just what men expect us to do, that we're like, you know, we're just going to be here fighting, because again, we're talking about like who's showing up to do this work. Marginalized people, non-binary people, trans people, queer people, women who are like the ones being affected by patriarchy, machismo, but we're the ones who also have to like dismantle the systems that are fucking you up, like, so that you can get more power. Mm-mm. I'm just like done with all that bullshit.
Make it make sense,
clowns. Anyway, straight up, we've been talking for like almost 2 hours now.
Let's keep it going. Let's drive keep the it going. Point I'm home. All, let's. We're not going to stop until men are fully canceled.
Until they are eradicated. Massandry. And this is like the thing, like, I'm just like, a cis man could literally listen to this whole entire episode, and this would be the only thing
that they
hear. Like, yep. Cancel on, like, that's it. They would dismiss literally every fucking thing we just said, and they'd be like, wow, Bitter Brown Fens wants to eradicate men.
Yeah.
For no reason. They're just angry.
Yep. I think about that, too. Like, every time we do this and we talk about an issue and we make a joke, I'm like, this is literally all people are gonna hear. Watch.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just ridiculous that we've endured so much, like, violence from men that we can predict the violence that's going to come because of our actions. Because of us critiquing. Like, it's not, like, it's, I know we're laughing. Like, it's not funny, but it's, like...
It's pathetic.
Yeah.
It's, like, embarrassing. Like, I'd be embarrassed to be a man. Like, a cis man, I'd be fucking embarrassed. Like I said, like, I don't know how you're so loyal to some fucking system that says you're automatically a piece of shit because you're a man. And that you have no self-control, and that you're fucking violent, and that you shouldn't be able to cry, and that you shouldn't be able to, like, hug your homeboy or say you love him. I don't understand.
Or just make out a little.
No homo. But, like, but like, how are you so loyal to this fucking system that doesn't even let you be a full human being? You know what I mean? Like, but you're not okay. Like, you're okay with this system, but you're not okay with systemic racism or with white supremacy. Like, we go to the power thing. Like, it's just, that's it. Like, I'd be embarrassed to be a man. Like, I should be embarrassed that I'm dating a man. Actually, I'm kind of embarrassed right now, but
lock him up.
<So dumb. laughs> Self-drag right now. But yeah, it's just like, oh, so because there was this tweet which reminds me of this, and it's by Omeg Dami on Twitter. It says, all men benefit from the actions of violent men. It keeps women in check. It allows men to perform the barest minimum and still feel good about themselves. The existence of violent men grants good men awards for basic decency. And that's like exactly what it is. Like, even if you're not a violent man, like, the fact that violent men exist, it makes you a good man. You know, it rewards you for not doing that. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, that we're, like, conditioned to reward men because they're not, like, these terrible other men, right? And at the same time, like, they still can be shitty just in other ways, and but they're just not on the level of these other men. So we excuse it. So that was a lot on this whole episode.
There's no winning. Welcome to living under patriarchy, as described by two bitter brown femmes.
Yeah, we're done. We're sick of y'all. Only a few men can stay. Gerard Way can stay. That's it.
People are going to be like, but the first season of Umbrella Academy was hella misogynist. Mm. And you're right.
I'm like, Anyway, we got to wrap up the episode.
Someday. No, this is a telethon. We're going to keep going until patriarchy is canceled.
Could you imagine? Oh, no. We're going to die here.
So, with all of that said, we are going to end this episode on La Tigra's song, Decepticon.
Yes. So, we were trying to... So, in case you missed it, this episode was... We're saying it is Clown Week. When is Clown Week? It already started, right? August 1st?
Yeah, through 7th, I believe.
Through 7th. So it's officially Clown Week, which we devoted to men because they are clowns. So next time a guy is like, when is Men's Day? Be like, bitch, you have a whole week. Congratulations, it's here. But we were trying to think of a song, initially like something in reference to a clown. But then I was like, you know what, let's just do an anti-men or slash feminist song. And I also like realized that this was one of the heavy conversations, and maybe not, like, I don't know, because I feel like we do some heavy shit where, like, last time I was crying for like, the whole episode. that was really heavy. I think that this was heavy, but not in a way, I hope that it wasn't triggering heavy, like it wasn't traumatizing, but it is heavy in the sense that this is real shit, right? Like, abuse is real, it's violent, patriarchy's violent, machismo's violent, but I hope that it was more of a conversation, right? And a thing, you know, we mentioned that we know that a lot of our listeners aren't necessarily, like, men, or particularly cishet men, so this isn't, like, new to our followers, who are probably, like, women and queer folks, non-binary folks. Like, we know this, right? We all know this about men. But just, like, I learned some stuff, or was able to articulate some stuff from Ruben here, so we hope that this was just, like, a conversation, right? And also just, like, us being fed up. I'm sure we're all fed up with this. So that you met us there in our frustration and anger. And I don't know what other words. I think I just have felt anger. I just felt anger and annoyance. But anyway, so I wanted to pick an upbeat song so that we didn't end also like on just a more like song where it's like political and we have to think about men again or about patriarchy. But I did pick this song because it is by La Tigra, who's a feminist band, a feminist queer band, lead singer Kathleen Hanna, who is one of my heroes, even though she's white. Some mistakes can be forgiven, but you know, Kathleen Hanna kind of is credited to founding or being a big part of the Riot Grrrl movement. She was the singer of Bikini Kill, and then she went on to do La Tigra, well, Julie Ruin and La Tigra as well. And now she does the Julie Ruin. So she's still around. You know, she's like a white feminist. I think that her politics have improved, obviously, since the Riot Grrrl movement. I don't think she was necessarily like terrible, but you know, she is white. She's a white woman. So, Anyway, that's how I came into feminism at one point, through the Riot Grrrl movement, and that's why I kind of have this special place for her in my little feminist heart, even though she's white again. She's bi, and she was a stripper when she was in Bikini Kill, and so I always felt, like, validated in that, because when I was a stripper, I was really young, and I always had, like, a lot of people questioning me because I was, like, the only feminist people knew, and they always try to kind of be like, you're whack, like, what, why are you a feminist? And then when I started dancing, they were like, how can you say you're a feminist if you're a stripper? And at that time, I really didn't have like any like framework of sex work and feminism or like how to articulate that, so a lot of the times I felt like I was a shitty feminist. And then when I found out that Kathleen Hanna was like a stripper when she was in Bikini Kill doing Riot Girl, I was like, fuck yeah. So anyway, that was just, I appreciate Kathleen Hanna. Anyway, so this song though, even though like I'm sure a lot of people have heard it at one point or another, very MySpace-y, it's like came out like in 1999, I want to say. It's fun and it's dancey, but she also wrote it for the singer of I don't think he's a singer, I think Fat Mike of NOFX, who's like a punk band, and they wrote a song about her, and they're just misogynist assholes, and so she wrote this song about them. I don't want to get into that feud, but it is about a man, and so I thought it was appropriate. Also because it's fun, though, it's not like a sad song. So anyway, we hope that you enjoy the song. We also hope that you enjoyed this episode. I know we talked for a really long time, but you know, there's a lot to say about men.
But we kind of went off, though.
We went off. We did. We went off. again, it's about to be 4 a.m, and we we went off for a long time. So, any last words, Ruben? I mean, I'm trying to think if I have
this,
any.
This is kind of a bop. I don't know. I didn't know the history of the song. I just know that, like, it always came on when I was, like, peeking, like, at the club. back in the scene days.
Yeah, no, I knew that it was like she was definitely talking about a man, like she was talking shit about a man in the song. Yeah. But then when I realized like the background of it, I was like, oh fuck yeah, like fuck that guy. Fuck that guy. Anyway,
men's rights to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, so please vote for me, mayor of El Paso, eventually president. I'm on president, and then we'll lock them all up.
Okay, Cassandra Ocasio-Cortez.
I felt like, yeah, I don't have any final thoughts, because again, men are not listening to this, but if they were, I'd be like, fuck you, bitch. Just kidding. Everything I had to say, I already said. So.
Yeah.
Venmo us. Men, if you're listening to this, sign up for our Patreon. They can't even do that. They can't even, like, they're so ugly. Okay.
And yet.
And yet what? Say
it. I was like, just like, why are, like, god damn it. Like, and yet men are attractive. And, like, for what?
Why? I know, like earlier I was literally going off about, like, all the men in the Umbrella Academy. I'm like, oh, Diego's so hot. And, like, Ben is hot, too. And I'm just like, what? Why? Like, why? Like, why are they attractive?
Like, what is the point of that?
Like, what are they? Like, ugh. I'm like, ugh. I hate it. That's why I say lesbians win. Yeah. You win, lesbians. You are the most powerful beings. You're not attracted to men. You don't care about them. That's awesome.
All right, y'all. Thank you for joining us. Follow us all over the internet. You can find the links in the description for where to follow us.
Yes. Bye.
All right, y'all. Bye.